Hello, everyone. This is Stephen the Warman Wright, and I am here with an exclusive interview with President of MPL, ex-world champion of the world, Clifton Brown, longtime great, you know, full-time great guy, longtime stay in the sport. Clifton, say hi to everybody.
Hello, everybody. Thanks for having me on. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Okay, well, Clifton, we'll go ahead and start. Just to give everyone the background, give the story of Clifton Brown, the Muay Thai career, all the way from, you know, how it started, because, you know, a lot of people think you got to go undefeated forever and win a world title, but you didn't have that start. You did have that finish. Go ahead and tell people about your fight career.
Well, I mean, it was interesting. Obviously, I started a very, very long time ago. When I was 12 years old, I think the first time I was playing Street Fighter 1, I got to the end of the game, and of course, there was Adon, and then there was Sagat, and I could never beat Sagat. And so it's just something that, for whatever reason, it stayed with me. I didn't even know what the style was at the time. I just liked it, you know. And then got a little bit older when I was 16, training in with some friends just a little bit. I see a guy pull up with some Muay Thai shorts, authentic. I'm like, oh my God, where'd you get them? Where'd you get them? He's like, oh, there's this Thai trainer, Suchart, teaching Muay Thai here in the city. You should go check him out. So I went for like three classes. He destroyed me with the workout, and I didn't come back for a little while. And then when I was 18, graduated high school, I'd been chasing girls, playing basketball. I thought that that's what I was going to do, but I couldn't go further with basketball, and I just sort of dove into Muay Thai. A year later, I was living in Thailand and, you know, in a place where some people had never seen a black person before, north of Thailand, outside of Chiang Mai. And you know, I trained, lived like a Thai, and lost my first three fights, and then after that, you know, started to have some success. So that's how it began, and then just continued, you know, a long career. You know, for a long, long time, I stayed and trained with Master Suchard. He was my my main instructor for the bulk of my career. At the end of my career, I trained in other places, but it was a great experience. I mean, I learned tremendously about the sport, about myself, about the world of Muay Thai, and here we are now.
Crazy. So how did the MPL turn about? Like, I remember you gave me a Facebook message almost a year ago, and you said, be on the lookout for this new fight organization, and we're in talks of coming out. We didn't even have a name at that time, but you said, be on the lookout for some new fight organization that's going to come out. How did the MPL come about?
Well, you know, in my career as a fighter, you know, I had been involved in a lot of successful promotions. I think one of the best ones I've ever been on was Khazros promotion in Sweden, Rumble of the Kings.
Yes.
Also, Super League, when it was running, it was a really great experience. You know, and then I've also been on some ones that were a little dodgy. And throughout my whole career and all over the world, I mean, I've been lucky. I fought in, you know, numerous countries. I just observed a lot, you know, how the fans are reacting, how promoters were doing things, good and bad, you know, and I mean, at that time, I wasn't actually fully aware of how much of it I was recording in terms of in memory. But when I was getting to the end of my career, I was contracted to be a matchmaker for Champions of Champions, as well as fight on the event, which was a little bit crazy. And really, for me, it sort of started there, like really thinking about getting as many of the best fighters together. It had never happened before in Muay Thai. And obviously, it garnered a lot of attention because, you know, with the sport having eight weapons, it's interesting to see how a fighter will adapt and what they'll use to change the fight. So getting the best fighters in the world together was, at that moment, something that I wanted to do a lot more of. I fought a couple more times, and, you know, and the day that I retired, the next day I was working on the MPL. Sorry, go ahead.
Nice. Well, yeah. Basically, what went into picking the fighters for the MPL? Because I've known you for a very long time. You are very pro female Muay Thai fighting, so you're giving opportunities to, you know, the Julie Kitchens of the world and Valentina Shevchenko. Like that's going to be those two girls look like they're on a, those women are look like they're on a collision course in that weight class. How did you go about picking, you know, the female fighters that you chose? How did you go about picking the male cast, the weight classes? What went into that decision? Because, you know, Liam Harrison, Muhammad Kamal, you have a huge lineup, like some good guys, people who are known from the Muay Thai world and the kickboxing world coming together.
Well, you know, as I said, I've been involved in the sport forever, and so, you know, I'm a fan first and foremost. Like, I love Muay Thai. I've been doing it for the last 18 years of my life, so it's crazy. And, you know, throughout that time, I've always noticed who's the best fighters. And it's like, okay, I seen Valentina Shevchenko fight, and I heard her name before, but I saw her fight close up and personal at the Sport Accord Games a couple years ago. And it was unbelievable how good this girl was. And I mean, she's got a ton of experience, but outside of Muay Thai circles, most people don't know her. She's been a multiple-time world champion at the World Amateurs in Thailand, and she's a beast, really.
Yes.
And of course, Julie Kitchen, who is a fantastic fighter, stunningly beautiful. You know, everything's going for her. You know, and I've seen all of these fighters. I followed their career as a fan of the sport. Then, when it comes to the weight classes for the men, My thought was, what are the most competitive weight classes? Where is there the most competitive weight classes that have an equal amount of talent in Thais and an equal amount of talent in foreigners? I mean, if you go below the 140 weight class or the 147 weight class, it's going to be completely dominated by Thais. And I have no problem with that. You know, they're the masters and the founders of the sport.
Yes.
But if you want to sell a brand or you want to make the brand interesting for a world, not just Thailand, you have to include everyone else. So then, you know, the process of the weight classes became where is there the most equal or close to equal competition? Then where is there a pool of a lot of talented fighters? Now, that's the first weight class, obviously, 147. 160 is the most hotly contested weight class in the world, which is why that weight class has the highest purse.
Yeah.
The next weight class after that is 182, which for me was the weight class that I was in. And, you know, thank God I've been champion of the world a few times in that weight class. But I think a lot of people who don't know those fighters, they don't know. They're like, oh, well, Clifton, you fought this guy, but I don't really know his name because we were too small for K1 and too big for K1 Max, right? So, but I know, because I, you know, even in that weight class, I think I fought four of those guys, and one of those guys I used to train with. So I know the talent level in the 182 division, how deep that goes. And so that's how that division came about. And then lastly, of course, the heavyweight. Now, we limited the heavyweight at 95 because, you know, K1 obviously is existing and has existed, and they've had all the fighters above 95 and big heavyweights. But I find that sometimes, you know, unless you're a Badahari or Ernesto Host or a Peter Aritz in his prime, most of the heavyweights' technique is really sloppy. And uh-huh. It's exciting to see a knockout, but it's not something that I think represents Muay Thai in particularly well. I don't know about kickboxing, but Muay Thai. So we limited it at 95 because the small heavyweights, you know, you've got, you know, if for Muay Thai, of course, you have Carnage, you've got Ramazan, you've got Han Chanarok from Belarus. These are, you know, Philip Verlinden from Golden Glory in Belgium. These guys are Badman, you know, and then Christopher Knowles from England. There's a lot of really good fighters in the heavyweight division. These guys have all had to fight guys much heavier than them. And I think that that's been their downfall. You know, I mean, in kickboxing, you've got the Tyrone Spongs, you've got Golken Saki, who are around that weight too, that are fantastic fighters, but suffer from the same consequence of fighting heavier guys. So we limited it at 95 because I knew that that would give us the best of both worlds, of power and explosiveness of the heavyweights, but great technique as well.
Would you consider down the road maybe introducing a weight class over 95 kgs? I only ask it because if you look at the generation of kickboxing today, I would say, you know, your Daniel Gittes, your Badaharis, who does let his hands go, you know, a lot. But if you look at a Daniel Gita, if you look at a Hezzy Gerges, Tyrone, as you mentioned, they're very technical. Like, we don't have any, not so many guys look like Mark Hunt in the K-1 World Grand Prix anymore, you know.
No. Let me come right out and say I'm not punking off any of these fighters or any of the heavyweights. I mean, I have full respect for everybody in this game. I'm just talking about percentages, you know. At the end of the year, we drop four fighters, we draft four new. So we want to be able to draft four new technically sound and really skilled fighters. And in some weight classes, you'll have a group like of eight really good fighters, and outside of them, there's not that many. You know, that's one thing. And the other thing is, the reality of it is a lot of those guys you're talking about have fought K1, and that price tag that K1 was paying fighters was ridiculous, which is why K1 doesn't exist anymore.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I mean, we're a new organization and we have a way to go, and we pay some fighters well, and we think for Muay Thai standards we're paying everybody well. But it's going to take us some time before we can pay fighters what K1 or what boxing or even what MMA is paying people. That's a completely different business model, and we're not there yet. So, you know, I mean, there are a couple of things. Obviously, it's a business, and I would love to have another weight class, and I'd love to have more than the weight classes that we have now, but we still got to run a business.
Nice. So let's talk about the MPL production. Production-wise, the first show came off. You know, if there's a couple things that I'd like to see, I thought the first show was promoted very well in terms of a lot of people knew about it. You know what I'm saying? Like a lot of people knew about the first show, but I wasn't as hot on the venue for the first show. Going to the Long Beach, in particular, like there was an event at Club Nokia in LA recently, a Muay Thai event, and I think that's a perfect area for that, you know, for a Muay Thai event. What goes into the process of where you would like to have a lot of these events? Is it just, you know, kind of what's available, what you think going to hold? Just because I'm curious about that, because that's the one thing I'm like a little critical of the group on. I'd be like, I would rather we choose a few more hotbeds of Muay Thai, but maybe the theme that you're probably going with is you're trying to introduce it to an area that doesn't have it.
No, I mean, ultimately, there's a couple of things that go into planning an event. You know, Long Beach it's obviously not downtown LA, so you have to consider where, in terms of triangulation. When I say that, I mean, where is it in terms of how can all the different regions reach it? You know, you've got to try to find a way where you can get people from one part of California, another part of California, where they can meet in the middle and get there. That's one thing. Number two, cost. You know, the doing an event right in the center of LA, if you want to do an event that has 5,000 people or possibly 5,000 people, that's better to say, since we didn't get the 5,000 people, then you have to look for a venue that can suit that. And then at the same time, you've got to look at a venue that can suit that, that's, you know, accessible to people, that has a beautiful ambiance for the event and a beautiful ambiance for television. So now you're introducing a couple other things that, you know, don't always fit in everything. I mean, I know the event at Club Nokia was fantastic, but it was done in a theater-style stage, so that's not necessarily friendly for television or friendly for the viewers. I know that sometimes people who are sitting in the front row, who pay the most in a theater type system, you know, you've got to spend your whole time looking up, and that means you're not going to see the action at the back of the ring. So there are a couple of things that you have to consider in all of this. And obviously our goal is to make this product as spectacular as possible for television. So if we're doing that, then we have to try to find a venue that suits that. In addition to that, you know, the being more accessible doesn't necessarily determine equal, like it doesn't automatically add up to more attendance. I know that the event that was at Club Nokia, yeah, the promoters did a great job. Everybody knew about it. They did a lot of promotion. They had all the best U.S. fighters on it. Their ticket prices were lower than ours, and they still had, you know, an equal or a lower amount of fans than we did. So it would be easy to say, okay, well, if you just do this and do that, you're going to get more fans. But the reality of it is, the market sort of shows you how much they're into Muay Thai, because the situation that we had, we brought the best fighters. The situation that they had the best U.S. fighters, and we still pulled, you know, relatively close to the same amount of people. So I don't know if the venue that we chose made a big difference on that.
Okay, so let's go ahead and go down the TV avenue. I'm a Muay Thai junkie. I'm a kickboxing junkie. I do a podcast show because I love it. I am definitely, if there's an MPL event going on, I want to see it. The only problem is I usually have to see it on delay. And the first event was, you know, that was a live stream. Can we get back to, or is there a plan to make sure that the majority of your events or the rest of your events are available for live stream? Because the Italy card was awesome. And in many ways, the Italy card was probably more appealing to me than the first MPL. Just the first one, of course, you're excited for it because it's the first one. But as far as some of the matchups, I really wanted to see that one. And then, of course, the results are out. Then, of course, some people were there's some controversy in some of the fights. Some people weren't a big fan of the decisions. But all of that was forum stuff. I would love to see this. So my question is, is the plan down the road to have more of the MPL streams? And then also adding with that, $25 is a pretty expensive stream. Is there any way we get that lower? $15.
Special price for you. You sound like we're on the night bazaar in Bangkok haggling for something.
That is right.
Well, listen, well, I mean, I understand, you know, first and foremost, the fans want to see the product, and it's our goal to provide them that product. But, you know, you have to consider a couple of things. Number one, in order for us to provide the fans with these matchups and these fighters, it costs money. This is the reality of it, right? So if fans want it for free, it's going to be a challenge. Because if it was the case that fans could get this type of content and this type of fighting for free, then any other promoter in the world would have done it already. So the reality of it is, it's a business, right?
And yes.
We are still trying to give the fans the best quality product at the lowest price point possible. So, you know, $25 for a stream is expensive, but you would pay $50 for a UFC stream. You would pay $79 for a stream to watch Floyd Mayweather. So, relatively, we're still very far for a premium quality brand. We're very low on the totem pole in terms of cost. That's number one. Number two, the problem with a stream is you can't always determine the quality, number one. And number two, people rip it all the time. And no matter how much security you have, you know, we saw our product on YouTube the day after. We saw our product on YouTube the week after. And for me, again, that hinders your ability to sell the product. So, I mean, I mean no disrespect to the fans. I want them to get the best product possible, which is why we've created the MPL. But until we can sign a deal in North America that can give everybody the best product and the best ability to view it for free, then it's going to be challenging for us to go back to the stream. And then, you know, then there's also the politics of knowing that you're actually getting, you know, legitimate numbers from your pay-per-view provider. So there's a lot of things to be careful of. And, I mean, obviously fans don't really care about that. They just want to see the fights. And what we've done is we've offered a fight a day on our Facebook page. And our new website will be launching soon, as we've had our beta website for some time, where people can stream and look at some of these fights. But it's not going to be something that we're just going to give away on the internet forever. That's not our business model, and we wouldn't survive that way. And at the end of the day, we want to provide the fans the best product possible, but we still have to pay our bills.
Okay, cool. Well, you know, I mean, I'll only hang on it a little bit longer. The only thing I would suggest is, as a person who, you know, is a fighter and now a fan and now a trainer, I train guys who even fight in the UFC, it's easy for me to look at, let's say, it's Showtime, for example. I believe their streams are 12 or 13 euros. So they're about like 12 bucks in the USA. You know what I'm saying? So they're around there.
No, 13 euros is $1.4. So 13 euros is closer to 20 bucks.
20 bucks? I'll have to when I looked at my last phone bill or my last cable bill, the what I paid for it was probably about $14. It wasn't a lot. Okay. And then the Rumble, the Swedish organization you were referring to, their podcast, or the one that they've got coming up for the Yosin Clive versus Kishinko fight, it's probably biggest fight of the year, one of the biggest fights of the year, whatever. That one's 10. And now I know you guys have a business model to follow, but I'm just curious, do you think more people would be encouraged to buy if you floated around the $15 mark, you know, US, you know what I'm saying? Like, just again, I'm making an argument for my fight fans out there. They're right now.
I understand. Let me just firstly correct you. I've just gone to XE.com. That's today's exchange rate. Mm-hmm. 13 euro is 18.49 US. So that's close to $20, as I said, number one. Number two.
So can you come down to $18?
Number two is like, you know, I honestly, I understand where you're coming from. I do. And in a perfect world, I'd like to be at that spot, but we can't do that right now. That's the reality. We're a growing business in the time of recession, and we got to make the best business decision possible to also give the fans the product. So we're working hard to find ways to give everybody access to it. But at the moment, I can't give you that. I can't tell you that's what we're going to do. I'm sorry. That's not possible, you know, for us to do that.
No problem.
Yeah, that's my answer. Sorry.
No, it's the correct answer. Remember that this isn't a situation where I'm attacking. It's just one of those things where the fan base would be like, "Man, I'd love it if it was cheaper." So I got to go. I'll ask him.
No, well, I mean, I think started the league, there was a little bit of hype. We had our press conference in Bangkok, all of these things, and I think a lot of people still did not believe it was going to happen. Down to the day that Boa Khao landed in the United States, people didn't believe it was going to happen until they saw pictures. And even still, they didn't believe it was going to happen until they saw the fight. You know, and then there are people on the internet throwing some dirt, saying it's not going to happen, blah, blah, blah. And that takes away the confidence of the fan base. So, you know, I think when people saw the quality of the show, or the people who were at the event in particular, who actually bought tickets, I don't think anybody who left the event had something bad to say. They got their money's worth. The production was top-notch. The venue was top-notch. And, of course, the fighters delivered awesome fights. So I think that, yeah, when you first come into a marketplace and you're charging a lot of money, or you're asking for a lot of money, or you're asking for, I don't think a lot, but, a higher price point, mm-hmm. Everybody thinks, man, you know, these fighters aren't even going to fight, and, you know, they're doubting it. I think after people have seen a product, they may change their mind, you know, because at the end of the day, there's no other event that you're going to go on and you're going to see, you know, possibly 10, 15 world champions on one fight card. You know, that, like, if you were going to do any other promotion and you get one or two and you balance that out, you're still getting your dollar's worth for what we're giving you.
Nice. So to move forward, you mentioned something about until you possibly get a TV deal. Is there something that you're looking at? Is there something close? Are you looking at maybe a HD Net? Or is there some sort of channel that could possibly be that venue, like a Spike or whoever's looking to invest in having, you know, like Spike, they kind of have that image of being, you know, kind of a man's channel with a lot of their shows. And I think Muay Thai, product-wise, Muay Thai kickboxing is, to me, just, I could watch it all day. Now I'm biased, you know what I'm saying? I could watch it all day. I would love for it to get on a major channel. Is there anything like that in the works? Are you and your team thinking about doing that? Is that maybe a next season thing, a down the road?
I mean, that obviously would be a great boon to our product and to the Muay Thai brand, the martial art of Muay Thai, if we could have a television deal. At the moment, I don't have anything to tell you. So, you know, in a perfect world, we would have that, but we're not there yet. And for me, I'm never the type of person that's going to tell you, oh, it's going to happen tomorrow, because, you know, I'm a fighter. You know, and when I say that, I mean is, if I go in the ring and I say, you know, I'm going to win or I could have win, that really doesn't matter. What matters is, did you win? You know?
Yes.
So I can't tell you we're going to have a television deal until we have a television deal. Simple and plain. You know, when we have something to tell you, I guarantee you and the fans will be the first people to know. I mean, there's nothing really to report, so I can't tell you that. I mean, that would be our goal. Yes, it would be our goal. Do we have anything in the works? Nothing's in the works until something is done.
Cool.
That's how I look at it.
So. Well said. Awesome. So they're trying. They're trying for us, people. All us kickboxing junkies out there, they are trying to bring it to you.
Hey, I didn't say anything. That's what I'm saying.
Allow me to be optimistic, Clifton.
Yes, yes.
Now, so moving forward, for people who, let's say someone's, you know, stumbled upon my podcast show, they're wondering about kickboxing, they hear me say MPL, they hear me talk about the Muay Thai Premier League. If someone had never heard of it, how would you explain how it works? The bracketing, you know, what's going to happen with your season?
Well, how it works is basically, I mean, it's an extended version of the World Cup tournament, you know? There are pools, there are groups, and, you know, in each weight class there's eight fighters, and they're the eight top in the world in their weight class. They're split into two groups, A and B, and then they round robin each other. So everybody has to fight the fighter in their group once. At the end of that round robin stage, the top two fighters who amass the most points go to the eliminations. So you amass points, you get 3 points for a knockout or a stop knockout victory, 2 points for the victory by a decision, 1 point for a draw, 0 points for a loss. The fighters who go on to the elimination stage, in Group A is number one, goes against Group B's number two. Group B's number one goes against Group A's number two. And then the winner of those fight for the world championship, a significant fight purse, and the ability, obviously, to come back next year. The bottom four fighters who don't make the elimination stages are relegated, they're dropped, and we bring in new fighters for next year, which is why it's called the Premier League. We keep it at the best fighters coming in all the time, and by doing that, it incentivizes the fighters to fight hard all the time, because there's no easy fights, and there's no reason to not perform your best, or you lose your opportunity to make money. And I think that's why everybody's involved in fight sports. I mean, you love the sport, but you also are trying to pay your bills. And so I think that by doing the formatting the league this way, it's the most transparent and definite way to determine a champion. There's no politics. We have no favorites. You earn it in the ring. That's the bottom line, you know. And I think the thing that I've learned throughout my fighting career, I've had some decisions that I didn't like or whatever, but the truth of the matter is, at the end of the day, there's a billion reasons, you know, and this goes for everything in life. There's a billion reasons and a billion ways that you can lose and have good excuses and good reasons, but there's only one way to win, and it's win. You know, and obviously in the sport of Muay Thai and in the sport of boxing and the sport of MMA, the people who win make the most money, you know, and the people who win are the ones who are remembered, whether fans like them or not, you know. And in Muay Thai, we've had some spectacular fighters over the years who have won a lot, and those are the fighters that people remember. So I want to give all of these best fighters that opportunity to be that person for this generation.
Awesome. So let's talk about the fights here. And in particular, I want to talk about the scoring for fights. A lot of people are interested in, we'll use a fight that just happened. Of course, and I know you've heard it because you hit the forums up. People are a little upset about the Muhammad Kamal versus Liam Harrison fight. In the fight, if you were to score it as a kickboxing perspective, Muhammad Kamal landed a lot with the hands. He scored it down in the first round, and that portion of the fight went in his favor. I even thought that he won the Muay Thai portion because I thought he landed some elbows. It's a close fight, but I thought he won the fight. With that said, in a full Muay Thai rule setting, sweeps and dumps matter. And Liam, and at points of the fight, just had his way with him. It was almost like whenever Liam, like the thing that makes Valentina so special is even if you can, you know, get past her straight left hand, as soon as you get in a clinch, you're going down. And Valentina is going to be on top. And in this fight, Liam seemed to be on top. For those who are wondering how you guys go about the scoring for your fights, the committee that you guys have, the judges that you guys use, what is the premise? What should someone who doesn't know anything about the scoring expect from the scoring? What are you scoring?
Okay. Well, first and foremost, I posted that fight in high quality on our Facebook page today. It'll be up for 2 days only. So if you're listening to this, fans, you can watch it for 2 days and you can make your own determination. I think, you know, scoring, and before I explain our rules, the rules for scoring have been on our website before the first event. So it was pretty plain, and scoring in our fights are based on that rule base. So there's no wavering. There's no personal opinion. And I think that is the thing that's challenging for people when you're watching a fight is, you know, most of the people who are complaining about the decision didn't even see the fight, number one. And for me, that's interesting how you can sort of make that determination and toss mud when you didn't even see the fight because we didn't post it before. Then some people have posted a version of the fight from far away with a camera phone. Well, you can't judge impact or damage from far away. You couldn't see cuts from far away, right? So those are a couple of things, and that's the reason why ultimately we just posted it so people can make their own determination. But what I'm saying is that there's a very big difference, and this is in all of life too, not just Muay Thai, between personal preference and the truth. You know, personal preference is what you'd like to see happen or what you want to happen. And I hear people say, well, if this was a Muay Thai fight, it would have been sport. Well, it was a Muay Thai fight, number one. And number two, you know, a foreigner fights against a foreigner, and he kicks more, and he feels like he won the fight. That same foreigner fights against a Thai who kicks more than him, and he feels like he won the fight. So I mean no disrespect to Liam Harrison. But what I think is really disrespectful is to be in a Premier League with a world-class opponent and belittle everything that person did. That's not honest. You know, his opponent won that fight. It's, you know, it's different, I think, for a fighter to have lost, where they go in the ring and they didn't perform to their best ability and they lose the fight. But it's another thing when another fighter beats you, right?
Yes.
And this is what I'm saying, that the opponent, Muhammad Kamal, and let me tell you, I have no favorites. I put this matchup together, I put both of these fighters in the lead, and I said before, I commentated that fight, that, you know, this fight, I don't know who's going to win. It's unbelievable, and I'm just excited to see her as a fan to watch it, right? But I think it's disrespectful to your opponent to be slandering the judging and the rules if you didn't see. And I said to Liam right after the fight, I said, Liam, I know you're really disappointed right now, but I guarantee you if you watch the fight, you may have a different opinion after your emotions have calmed down. Muay Thai scoring is about effective striking. You know, the challenge, the translation of Muay Thai means Thai boxing, but the actuality of Muay Thai means damage, right? Muay Thai is a sport that's about damage. Samat Payakarun has a fantastic quote. He says, you know, if it's beautiful, it's not Muay Thai. It must be exact and punishing 100% of the time. That is Muay Thai. And this is coming from the fighter who was one of the most artistic fighters who ever fought. Muay Thai is exact and punishing. And if the person who you're fighting is landing on you exactly, and the effect of what they're landing on you is punishing and has visual damage and causes visual effect, you can't argue with that. And you can say that it's K1 rules or not. That's bullshit because, and I said bullshit because it's true.
Yeah. Right?
Muhammad Kamal used elbows, he used knees, he used kicks. And if I go back to, like, the thing that I based the MPL on was Lumpini Stadium, 1992, circa 1992, when you had Wang Chanoi, Khalil Had, Samat, Ken Sak, Métis Chedi Pitak, Ole Kiet One Way. I could go on, Nam Kabuan. Those guys, Jung Sunan, Sak Bon Kon, I mean, I could keep going. Those guys, Orino, they beat each other all the time because the level was so high. And Wang Jianai used his hands and his kicks. Superlek used his hands only. You know, and you can't tell me that Superlek couldn't beat this guy because he punched.
For sure.
It came down to who was able to impose their will on the opponent with their weapons. So, okay, if you're a better kicker, and this guy's a better puncher, and he beats you with his punches and causes damage on you, then he wins the fight. It's not a matter of, well, I kicked and he didn't kick enough. And as a matter of fact, if you want to go by kicks alone, Muhammad Kamal kicked a lot in that fight.
Yes.
And landed a lot. So to question you about dumps now, the point of dumps, dumps in Muay Thai score only under the premise that the other person didn't land something on you clean. Now, keep in mind, I've been involved in Muay Thai for 18 years, right? So if I land a kick cleanly on someone's ribs and their response to my kick is to throw me on the ground, I still get that point for landing the kick because the landing of the kick trumps the throw. It's like rock, paper, scissors,
mm-hmm.
right? So in order for you to get that counter, so you see a fighter kick a fighter and the fighter kicks him back and lands, the second kick wins that trump because it's an equal or greater value counter, right? So again, our rules are transparent on our website. You can see it in order of operations. And if you look at those rules of order of operations, and they're in numbers from 1 to 7, the only point in those rules that Liam would have won in is in the second round, he landed more kicks, right? So point number one goes to Liam, but every other point after that, from 2 to 7, was won by Muhammad Kamal. So for me, it's not fair and it's disrespectful to degrade the performance of the opponent who beat you. You know, this is not personal. I chose, handpicked Liam Harrison and negotiated to have him in the league because I think he's one of the best fighters in the world, truly. But I think that in the ring, everybody can see what happens, and you as a fighter, I had to as well, be honest with yourself. If you be honest with yourself when you go back to the gym and you feel like you didn't improve, you weren't good enough in one area, fix that mistake, come back, he'll have another chance if he wins to meet Muhammad Kamal in the elimination stage. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
you have an opportunity to improve yourself. That's what it is when you lose. I mean, I lost to Nathan Carnage Corbett the first time he put my nose on the side of my face. Did it stop me from wanting to fight him again? No. Because ultimately, if I never fought Nathan Carnage Corbett, I would have never been WMC world champion later in my career. He showed me where I had to improve. And that's what it is in Muay Thai. Those fighters who fought in Lumpini, it wasn't about being undefeated. It was about being better every time, making more money, giving the fans a better show, and improving. You know, and that's how you truly became Lumpini or Ratchadavan Stadium champion. That's what Muay Thai is. This is not boxing where your fighter can go undefeated 40-0. That's bullshit. That doesn't happen in Muay Thai. Yeah. In Muay Thai, you earn your way, and you learn how to be better. And that's what the concept of the Muay Thai Premier League is. We've given everybody an opportunity. Liam Harrison lost his first fight. He still has two other fights to get into the elimination, and I'm encouraging him. I'll clap, and I'm cheering for him, and I want him to do well. But don't disrespect your opponent. That's not cool.
Yeah.
You know? That's not cool. I don't appreciate that. Like, even if you want to talk about how bad the organization scores, you could do that. I can, because that's subjective, you know? But to disrespect your opponent, that's not cool. Cool. You know? And that's not allowing yourself to learn from your mistakes either.
Nice. Well, again, you know, there's, like you said, there's no ducking in the sport. He'll have more opportunities. And, you know, another thing to go along with the scoring that you're referring to, diversity of strikes matters as well. And I felt like Mooch Kamal, really, you know, with the elbows, with his total offensive game, I thought he brought more to the table. To me, he won the fight. One more.
Sorry, just in terms of that, like, you know, if you look at like a work rate, it was almost like 4-1. You know, he landed 4 shots to 1 by Liam. I can't understand how a fighter can win like that. Like, you know, from you can't win if the person's landing 4 shots to 1. It's not possible.
We'll go ahead and we'll stay with the same gym, and I'll also let you. There's only one other fight I think that people talked about that they were disappointed in, and twofold. One, the Kai Hollenbach Jordan Watson fight. I was wondering if you could go ahead and give your opinions on that, just because some people, again, that's another one of those fights. How did you see the down? You know, clearly both sides, one side's like it was slipped, the other side's like it's a down. I did not see this fight, so I'm 100% turning this over to you as the person who was there. And then also, Kai Hollenbach, really, that's probably the biggest win by a U.S.-born kickboxer in quite some time. Just we don't get those international opportunities. Kai did a great job of winning on the West Coast here in the States. I'm just curious, what are you expecting for him down the road? Give a non-biased opinion of it. But before that, what were your thoughts on that fight? Because that's the other one that a lot of people talk about.
Okay, so let me just preface this by saying that I worked alongside Mauro Ranallo as a commentator for this event. And when I do that, I'm never a biased person. Kai Hollenbach earned his way in the Premier League because in the last year he's beaten Vasily Kalasa, he's beaten Simon Chu. He has performed very well, you know. And for me, when I drafted him, when I spoke to him and negotiated his contract, you know, I spoke to him. I said, you know, this is going to be a very big opportunity for you. You will be the person who can get the respect of Muay Thai, the Muay Thai world to the United States. We had negotiations with Miriam Nakamoto. Unfortunately, her injury stopped her from being in the league. We had negotiations with Kevin Ross. Unfortunately, we couldn't come to an agreement. Mm-hmm. But so Kai Hollenbach really is the lone American representative, and he's doing a great job. In particular, with this fight, you know, I can't say without sounding biased, or I can't say without sounding, I don't know how to answer this question without it being political. Mm-hmm. But I have to tell the truth. Kai Hollenbach fought really well, but Jordan Watson didn't fight as well as I've seen him fight in the past.
Uh-huh.
So I think in the case of Liam and Muhammad Kamal, I felt like Liam was beaten by Muhammad. I felt like in this fight, Kai Hollenbach fought well, so I'm not going to take anything away from Kai Hollenbach. But for me, it felt more like Jordan lost this fight.
Uh-huh.
He didn't perform the way that I've seen him perform before. And I think maybe what had happened is maybe he thought Kai was going to be an easy fight. He didn't prepare the way he prepared when he fought Boakau, or prepare the way when he fought Jotzen Klai, and he didn't perform very well. So to me, Kai beat him quite easily. You know, and I didn't think that was going to be, I thought that it would be a good fight. If anybody won, it was going to be another one of those, you know, back and forth fights, and it was going to be, you know, a war. But Kai actually beat him quite easily. And in the same way, Kai was landing two or three, four shots to Jordan's one. Now, this fight isn't on the internet yet.
Yep.
When we pull down the Muhammad Kamel Liam Harrison fight, we'll put this fight up for a couple days also to let people see and make their own determination. Perhaps awesome. They'll think I'm biased. I don't know. But all I'm saying is you know, I was a little disappointed in the performance of Jordan Watson. I have seen this young man fight fantastic fights. Unbelievable fights, you know, and I know that he's doing well in the Challenger series on television as well. And you know, he's a young guy. They're both 23 or 24 years old, both of these guys, so they got a long future ahead of them. And in the same way, he'll have an opportunity to win still in his division and go on, you know. But I think that you know, I thought Kai won, you know. Now to talk about the knockdown or the down in this fight, it wasn't a slip. He got knocked down. Now, whether or not he should have been counted, I don't know. I think that there was this knockdown was a little bit more questionable. But if you take away the knockdown, he still lost the fight.
Nice.
He still lost the fight if you take away the knockdown. The knockdown in the Liam fight was less of a questionable call because, again, I'm sitting at ringside and I saw the impact and I saw, like, Liam's eyes roll back in his head. Now, granted, he recovered really quickly and jumped right back up. But not even 10 seconds after that, he got hit by another punch and his legs buckled, which showed me that he wasn't quite all there, right?
Yes.
Liam also got buckled twice in the third round in that fight. So that fight, you know, it's definite that in my mind that Muhammad Kamel won. And then in the Liam fight, you know, people can see in a couple of days and they can make their determination for themselves. In a couple of days, I'll post the Jordan fight, and people can see for themselves and Kai. But I believe Kai won the fight pretty easily.
Okay, so if someone had never, let's talk about the being in the arena portion of it. I am thinking about, and I'm going to ask you for press credentials, I'm thinking about coming out to Holland in a week here. I just have to clear it away with my work because I am paid down here to train strikers, guys who are from Team Takedown, who fight in UFC and various other organizations. But my goal is to go up this weekend and check out the fighting. Would you like to give someone who's, you know, probably someone who's, you know, not like me, because I've been to, you know, hundreds of these things, but if you're going to go to the venue, if you're going to go fight week, what is fight week like for Clifton Brown as far as press conferences, open workouts? Explain that process for people.
Well, it depends really on the country that we're in. You know, we sort of tailor our fight week to the country that we're in. It's not the same everywhere. You know, in the U.S., we had open workouts in three different gyms in different parts of the city, or different parts of the area, sorry. And then we did the press conference. We had interviews with the fighters. We had photo shoots. These are all things that you know, are different in the country that we're in for a couple of reasons. Number one, it was a bigger deal in the United States because it was our first event, right? In the second event in Italy, we did a similar thing. We had the interviews, we had the press conference, we had photo shoots. And in Holland, we're going to have the same thing, but it's going to be a little bit more truncated simply because we've had the photo shoots for both fighters or for all the fighters in the league. And you know, it's not a brand new concept anymore now. This will be our third event. So, you know, we'll still continue to generate hype and still continue to tailor our events to the city that we're in. In Holland, we're still going to have a press conference. We're still going to have one open workout, but we're not going to be doing a whole bunch of promotional stuff in the fight week because the fighters are tired. You know, I mean, they work hard. They're training to fight a world-class opponent. And, you know, they have been fantastic to deal with. All of the fighters on a whole have been great. I think everybody's enjoying this opportunity with the MPL. But they're there to fight, and we want to give them as much time and rest to fight as they can so that they can perform at their best for the fans. For a fan, though, you're going to come and you're going to have a great time. You're going to be able to spend time in the venue. A lot of times you can stay in the same hotel as the fighters. You can get your autographs. You can get your pictures taken. And you can talk to them. I mean, all of the Muay Thai fighters, Muay Thai is a very strange thing because, you know, I've been in the ring with Gao Kli, I've been in the ring with Carnage, and we're great friends. You know, like, Muay Thai is not the same as other sports where fighters can train in the same gym in an open workout and fight each other the next day.
Yeah.
Hard to the death, and the next day after that, they're like, man, you hit me with a good one. And they go, you know, it's a strange thing. So the atmosphere for the fan, I think, is a little bit different from any other sport where you can really, truly meet and touch and talk to your heroes. It's not something that is common in other professional sports.
Awesome. So we're looking at the league. We're looking at this season. We're looking at the fighters that are involved. As we look MPL's future, is there any fighters that, you know, maybe that you have on your mind that's not in your league that you would consider, you know, having in the league down the road? Because right away, if there were people who I would promote at your 182 weight class, I would love if Yunus El Mahsani got an opportunity. That he's a Dutch fighter who is very slick. He's got a really good style. I would love to see him in it down the road. And then also for the women, English fighter Iman Barlow is absolutely insane. 18 years old, 140 plus fights. Do you have a list of people who you're like, you know what, you're not in my league right now, but I'm looking out for you to fight down the road?
Oh, well, I'm always looking at talent. You know, I mean, for me, as I said, you know, if I weren't working with the MPL or working with Warrior Cast Productions, I'd still be watching Muay Thai. I'd still be, you know, following the sport from the farthest regions of the world, trying to find, like, the dude who fought Simon Marcus, Artem Vachitov. Mm-hmm. No one knew who he was. And when you look at Simon, he's a, you know, he's chiseled from stone. People assumed that he was just going to run over Artem. And Artem is a Batman, just like Simon's a Batman. And we had one of the best fights of our event with these two guys fighting. So there's always talent in Muay Thai. And the thing that I love about Muay Thai is that even though a lot of the fighters don't make a lot of money, there's a lot of fighters in mm-hmm. Muay Thai. Like, it's almost like there's a tap of people just training all the time. And there's fighters who are good that you've never heard of. So I've always got my eyes open for the next talent, you know, and I know that with the format of our league, we'll be drafting four new fighters per weight class. So there's always an opportunity for fighters to send us their demo reel if we don't know who they are. But I do know who most of the fighters are in the world. And, yeah, we'll see what happens in the future, you know, who will be drafted for season two, you know. But we're as I said, we have no favorites. We've got fighters who fight normally for the WBC, some for the WMC, some for the WKA, some for the WPKL. It doesn't matter. There's no politics here. We just want the best fighters to fight. So the door is open. That's it.
Cool. Do you have something for the fans where maybe they can send some information about, you know, who they'd want to see in the MPL League? You know, like, so if I were just so-and-so fan, and I was like, I love the Matrix, Yunus El Mahsani, I want to send information to you. Is there something I could do email-wise? Or this is just for my listeners.
You know, you can contact us on our website, you know, at www.thempl.tv and send us to our website. There, our contact is info@thempl.tv or our Facebook page or Twitter. I mean, you know, it's you can reach us any way that you want, you know, and, you know, if we have time, you know, because it's ridiculously busy. My whole staff is probably working the jobs of five people for each person.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I'm always looking, always. So, you know, if you send us an email, and everybody who sent us an application, or every single fighter who's said they'd like to be in the league, whether we were able to let them in or not, I've responded to everybody. I've said, listen, we're full right now. We'll try to get you on a super fight. We'll look at you for next year. You know, and in terms of fighters who I'd love to have in the league who aren't in the league, I mean, the first person that comes to my mind is Fabio Pinca.
Nice.
You know, Fabio Pinca is I think in the 147 pound division is one of the absolute best fighters in the world, and you know, he's one of the fighters that we'd love to have, but you know, for whatever reason, we weren't able to make it happen this year. Hopefully, we can make it happen next year. Hopefully, we can get him on a super fight. I don't know. You know, we have a number of events coming, and I don't even know who's going to be on some of them. You know, I know who the league fighters are going to be. I don't know who the super fights are going to be. So we're always looking, and, you know, we're looking for talented people. We tried to get Andre Hutnik for the heavyweight division, but it's a little bit above his weight class. You know, and you know, we're looking for fighters who are talented, love to fight, and we want to win, you know, and yeah, the door is open.
Okay, cool. Well, I'm going to end the show with two questions. First, in your fight career, what would you say was the highest moment of your fight career?
The highest moment of my fight career. Wow. It's hard to say.
I know what you're going to say, though. You're going to say meeting Stephen Wright in Jamaica 3 years ago.
You know what? That's exactly right. Meeting Stephen Wright in Jamaica was the highlight of my Muay Thai career. it's hard to say because I don't want to disrespect any of my opponents. You know, winning or losing, I learned a tremendous amount from my opponents, you know, and I have to thank every single one of them, the people who I beat, the people who I lost to, because ultimately, they all made me a better person, they all made me a better fighter, and they all made me have a better understanding of the sport. So, you know, it's hard to say one was better than the other, one was the highest point. I think if I had to absolutely choose one, it would be my first world title. You know, I fought one Lobsip Poleko, one Soisatapan in Bangkok. Mm-hmm. I weighed like 74 kilos. I had a 2 kilo weight advantage. He weighed 72 and a bit, 72.1. This was in 2001. At that time, no one really knew who I was, you know. And I had just fought on an event in Chiang Mai like a month before, and he fought the main event, and I was under the main event, and he beat this dude pretty badly, and I won my fight, but I was cut pretty badly from elbows. So, you know, I was gonna fight him, and I was quite nervous, and you know, we're gonna fight in Pattaya in Turpisit Stadium, and he comes into my change room, and I guess he was trying to intimidate me, and he says to me, you know, so your last fight, you got cut by elbows, eh? You lost by elbows, eh? I won the fight, but I got cut, and it was weird. It had the complete opposite effect on me, you know. Instead of me being afraid, I was like, oh, this guy's human. You know, mm-hmm. And I went in the ring, and it was still one of the hardest fights I've ever had in my life. But I won in Thailand with Thai judges. That was a big, big moment for me because it sort of made me realize that I could actually compete at the world level. And so I wouldn't say it was my highest moment, but it was the most, solidifying moment. It was the most defining moment in my career because that's what really took me from, you know, maybe I could do this to, yes, I could actually do this. So that was a turning point in my career. And then, of course, fighting in Jamaica. Those were two great opportunities. I fought Gao Clay both times. I actually thought, and here's my complaint as a fighter, I actually thought that I won my first fight with him cleaner than my second fight with him.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's how it goes. I just had my opportunity, and I rematched him, and was able to win the next one, and that wasn't easy either. At that time, Gao Clay was still, you know, one of the best fighters in the world, and he made it very hard for me. So those were both, you know, a high point for me. The second Champions of Champions event was awesome because of the fact that there was so much talent on that show. So to sort of be part of that was a high point too. So, yeah, you know, I can't pick one, but it was a great career.
Awesome. Yeah, that second, because that's where I met you, that second Champions of Champions fight card was really, really good. People don't know that you speak fluent Thai. Could you explain? It just, you were just there long enough to pick up the language. Like another person I think of is Chris Forster from Africa via Sweden. If you go to Sorvor Pin, you meet him. He speaks English and so on, and he speaks perfect Thai. Could you just explain to people how that came about? You just around it enough?
Well, yeah. I mean, the first time that I went to Thailand, it was like 1997. It was a long time ago, right? And
uh-huh.
I was in this little village called Sun Paliang, outside of Chiang Mai. So, you know, and when I went there at that time, honest to God, some people had never seen a black person before in real life. So there was no hot water. There was a squat toilet. There was no television. It was really, really Spartan living. And nobody spoke English. So I stayed there for a year. I had to learn some sort of, you know, weird bastardization of the Thai language to survive. And you know, it was weird because I was there for a year. I wasn't very confident with my Thai speaking. And when I came back 6 months later, it was just weird. It was like all of the stuff that I learned, I absorbed it. And I came back and I could just speak Thai. So obviously, like a child, you speak the language and then you add more vocabulary to it. And, you know, over the years, that's like 14 years ago, you know, I think it's 14 years ago, if I'm adding, right? Yeah, it's almost 15 years ago now, almost, that I just, you know, I've learned Thai well. And then I had a Thai trainer here in Canada, so I was always able to practice my language and he would correct me. And that's really how it came about.
Awesome. So I'm going to give the floor to you. Is there anything that you want to sell, promote? This is your time to get your name out there, to get your company out there. The floor is yours.
Well, all I want to do is let the fans know that we are offering you the best of the best in Muay Thai, without politics, without BS, to determine who the true champion is. We have fighters from all over the world, not a regional organization, and we're doing our best to provide the fans for whatever, for, you know, as long as I've been a fighter, I've heard fans say that they want to see more, they want to hear you see the best fighters fight, and this is not happening for Muay Thai, and that's not happening for Muay Thai. We're giving the opportunity now, so it's really up to you guys to support your local fighter, to support, you know, your local shows, and then support the Muay Thai Premier League, because I believe that is what it's going to take for all these fighters to have an opportunity to keep growing their talent, to make money, to have a goal to achieve and to reach for, to grow the sport. So I'm asking the fans to support us, watch our videos, come to our live events, support your local fighters from whichever country they are from, and let them know that you're behind them. And I think that if we work together, we can definitely make not just the MPL successful, but the sport of Muay Thai successful.
Cool. And then one more thing, just on that, just something that you said just sparked up this question. Will we have any more of those? There are like these videos that led into MPL, like
Into the Fire.
Yeah, those are great.
Into the Fire episode 2 just debuted on the Score here in Canada on Tuesday night. So I'm just letting you guys know that obviously you're going to get access to it on the internet very soon. So it would be soon. That's all I'll tell you soon. It will be very soon that you guys will get to see episode 2 of Into the Fire. Episode 3, we're working on it right now. We're editing it. Episode 4 is coming too. So we're going to have an episode for each event. And then when we get closer to the finals and the semifinals, we're going to have a couple of episodes, because by that time, obviously, we're going to know who's fighting who, and we'll be able to tell you more and more of each of those fighters' stories. So look out for them. They're part of the whole process of letting everybody know what Muay Thai is about and what the MPL is about and what these talented fighters' stories are. And cool. Each and every one of them have a fantastic story. I mean, you know, from all over the world, these fighters have come, and they have different goals and different launching pads from where they started and different reasons to why they're doing it, but they're all fantastic, and they can all tell you a little bit about the sport and the growth that Muay Thai has given them. So yeah, support the Into the Fires as well.
Clifton Brown doing his share to make sure that anybody who says kickboxing and Muay Thai is dead sounds absolutely ridiculous.
Well, it's our goal. I mean, it's our goal, just to give the fans an opportunity to see the best in the world. I mean, I'm a fan of fight sports in general. You know, so, I mean, you know, when it comes to MMA, I think that they've done a great job in opening the market and letting people know that fight sports are still relevant. And for us, you know, we just want to give Muay Thai a little piece of that. I mean, I don't suspect in any way, shape, or form will ever, you know, be able to compete with the market share that MMA has right now. But we just want to give people an alternative to see the best in the world. And I think that, you know, when you compare, you know, sometimes the champions of the world in MMA and the champions of the world in Muay Thai, it's a different in terms of what they have to go through to become champion. Well, Kyle Porpermuk has, you know, almost 300 fights. Sayok has 300 fights. Like, these guys got to earn their way. You know, and we just want to celebrate them. That's it.
Awesome.
You know, the Nathan Corbett, the Julie Kitchens, the Valentina Shevchenkos, Angelique Vitois from France. You know, people that some people don't even know about. But these are the fighters that we want to celebrate and give them an opportunity. That's it.
Awesome. Well, thanks again. You'll hear from me soon, because I'm hoping to get press credentials to the fight event. And also, if you ever need a commentator, I'm your guy. I am your guy.
All right. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks very much. Bye.
No worries. Take care.
Yep, bye.